AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, broadcasting in southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio. However, you can listen from anywhere in the USA simply by logging on to our internet site, AmericanWorkersRadio.com, and click on the Listen Live link. You can also go to the radio broadcast anytime, 24 hours a day, and listen to past broadcasts and today's broadcast. Just remember that address. It's very easy. AmericanWorkersRadio.com. First of all, we are going to have open forum today because a lot has to be said. A lot has to be said. And I want everybody to say it the way it is and not dilly-dally around. I want to thank the people that I meet in my travels for letting me know that they tune into the broadcast. In fact, I had a young lady today stop me and let me know that she tunes in. And she is a supporter of our movement. And this is what it's really all about. If you have somebody that email them and ask them to tune in. And of course, let them always know about our rebroadcast, which is a very important way. Our counters for the rebroadcast are very, very good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am pleased to say that we have today the entire panel members, Larkin Conley, Rich Logis, Mark Andel, and also Curtis Ellis. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, and I'm looking forward to a very interesting broadcast. I got some real good comments about last broadcast as well, and that's really good to hear because we had an open-type event, too, and spoke our mind. A lot of things have certainly happened in America in the recent weeks, and one of the things that remain vibrant in the minds of the people that I meet and speak to was the State of the Union by President Trump. The president offered a good message on what has been taking place in the United States of America over the last 2 years. And because I am in human services, because I am pushing jobs, job fairs, and all the things that go along with employment and personal security and self-sufficiency, everybody understands why I have a passion for this and why Larkin has a passion, Rich has a passion, Mark has a passion, and also Curtis has a great passion as part of the American Jobs Alliance. Well, it's often said that a picture is worth a thousand words. And people said to me, when they looked at the State of the Union and saw the anger, the jealousy, the sourness, the hate on the faces of many of the elected officials that were in that chamber, they were very, very disappointed. They feel that a speech should be uninterrupted. It should focus on the speaker rather than making a spectacle of the State of the Union. There was a message. There should have been no one looking as though they were looking at on menus and people sitting back in chairs, not clapping and all. It, to me, was disrespectful. People around the country of America, and around the world watched the State of the Union to see what America has on its future agenda. And I really feel that in the future, they should not have a spectacle-type State of the Union. The president, whoever it is, should be able to get up there and give his speech and let the people know, without all the foolishness and the hateful faces and this and that. That's my opinion. I would like to hear more from the Democrats and the Republicans of what they're going to do to help more working-age and able-bodied people get a job, get skills, and let's get America moving 100% in the proper direction. This morning as I was driving in, also, they announced again that there are over 6.8 million jobs in America open right now as we speak, unable to be filled because many of them require skills that should have been taught in high school to students, and yet the students are not qualified. They many cannot read instructions, measure, add, subtract, the whole gig. Some of the jobs, when I read the descriptions, I'm really disappointed to know that this has happened. As we start off today, I'm going to ask all of our people to have their say. I'm going to start off with our special guest, Curtis. What is new, and what did you think of the speech?
I thought it was a masterpiece. Thought it was a great speech. Really hit the notes of what's important in America today, and I got to say, it hit the Democrats. I mean, it framed the issue. It framed the discussion that's going to dominate the election in 2020, which has already begun because you see all kinds of people announcing their candidacy for the Democratic nomination. Is it going to be socialism, or is it going to be the America that we grew up with that is not a socialist nation? I love your comments about the spectacle. It really does not serve the Democrats well to be seen sitting around gloomily, nursing their Preparation H, sitting uncomfortably, dressed in some type of attention-grabbing outfits. This is not the way adults are expected to behave. This is not the way children are expected to behave. This is, and to the viewing audience, it looks like, folks, just do your job. Why are you trying to grab the mic here, grab the attention, grab the spotlight? You're here to listen to a speech by the president and then offer your opinion on it. Take it or leave it, or take parts of it or what? Not to try to upstage the president and do all kinds of crazy things, which is what the Democrats have been doing for the past 2 years. They just can't accept the fact that Donald J. Trump is president of the United States.
They can't accept the fact, Curtis, that a businessman has in 2 years made some steps forward to get this country's engine moving again. From what I've been seeing and what I've been hearing from the people, there are too many national leaders that want to promote the victim mentality. Everybody's a victim. Unfortunately,
right.
We, the taxpayers, are the victims because we've been forced to pay for all these victim-type programs, and it's got to come to an end.
Yeah, and I believe people are sick of it. I believe that, actually, what I believe is that people aren't aware of the degree to which the Democratic Party has now become committed to this victim mentality, this victimhood mentality. And it's not just the Democratic Party. It has permeated the federal government. I worked in the executive branch under President Trump, and I saw the degree to which the operating system of the federal government, of all of these programs and policies, whether it's grant-making programs or how they frame the issues, how they frame what they look at, is totally controlled by this victimhood mentality. A small example, there's an Office of Disability Assessment in the Department of Labor. Tiny bureau, by federal government standards, has a minuscule budget of, you know, $50 million or something like that, which is nothing in the federal bureaucracy. They have a policy that defines handicapped not on the basis of physical handicaps, but they say handicaps are a social construct, that if we put in enough wheelchair ramps and retrofit all the workplaces in America and the homes and the transportation system, there will be no handicapped. You know, a person is handicapped only because society makes them handicapped, which is, you know, it's an interesting college dorm room debating subject, but does it reflect reality? Hello? And they do this with a straight face, perfectly seriously, and you find it everywhere. That's why in this Green New Deal that the Democrats are now touting, they list all the people that are going to be helped by the Green New Deal. And it's not just people that are, you know, suffering heat stroke because of global warming. No, it's going to be students and migrants and one group after another. And you total them all up, and it's just as you said, Michael, over half the country, the United States, is a victim, is some kind of a victim that needs to be taken care of by us, the hardworking American taxpayer. So that's we've got one party in America that is either openly, avowedly socialist or afraid to stand up to the socialists among them.
Curtis, before I go to Rich, I'm going to ask you this. I would like to see a vote taken on this new green whatever it is initiative and get it over with. Let's see who really is going to vote for it. Let's look at a count, a head count. I want to see who is going to. I'd like to see it done today. I understand the Senate was supposed to do something. I'd like to see Speaker Pelosi take a vote, and let's see who really wants to move forward with this. Of all the all the people that have announced for president, I really feel they should put a written plan in writing, put it on the table, and let all of us see what they have to offer. I'd like to see the House and Senate take a vote. If they want to do it, let's see what they're going to do to move it forward. If they don't want to do it, let's take it off the table and move to the subjects that will help make America better and get more jobs in better neighborhoods, into better schools, have them make sure that their future is secure. That's what there's too much media killing the people with foolish ideas. Rich Loges, how are you doing?
Michael, good morning. Hey, Curtis, welcome, welcome back on. And sorry, guys, that I had to abruptly leave last week. Was at a business event with a number of small business owners, and I'm happy to report, Michael, that the business owners I was with, they're feeling good about the economy, feeling good about their industry, and you know, our attitude is just keep the foot on the gas, right? The thing is, it's hard to get momentum. It's harder, I believe, to keep that momentum. And Michael, I'm going to answer your. So you just made a statement about a plan. Okay, so I've had this argument with some of my Democrat-leaning friends and associates for a number of years, where they tell me, Curtis, that the Democratic Party doesn't stand for anything. That could not be more inaccurate. We already know, Michael, the 2020 candidates have begun pitching their plan to us. And every single bullet point on the plan, Michael, is a losing narrative. Russia, loser. Economy, loser. The wall and border security, loser. Infringement upon our God-given guaranteed constitutional rights, loser. Abortion, loser. Let's get high legally on smoking doobies, loser. Judicial activists at the federal and Supreme Courts, loser. Faux transgender science, loser. Exploiting children who suffered a tragedy, which we have the one-year anniversary of Parkland tomorrow. And I don't blame the kids, Michael, but what did we do? What did Democrats in the country do? They fed a bunch of traumatized children the usual debunked Democrat and D-Mike, Democrat media industrial complex, anti-gun cult lies, myths, half-truths, prevarications, and conspiracy theories. Red coat Hitler youth, anti-gun cult creepy kid activism, loser. Is anyone have, Curtis, is there one narrative, just one, from the DNC that's a winner?
No.
Is there one? Is there one? I don't want five, Michael. We don't need a plan. The plan is eight words. How is there a single winning narrative out of the answer? I'm asking everyone. I'm asking seriously. That doesn't mean our side has all winning narratives. Of course, that's not true.
Did you hear Stacey Abrams' rebuttal to the State of the Union?
I did. I have a nickname for Stacey Abrams. Since she's in Georgia, I call her the Peach Tea Marxist.
Well, her, she has the slogan.
That's my
nickname. America, we're coming for you. Right. It's like, oh, my God. Help me.
Same thing, Curtis. Remember, Democrat narratives are always about, and it doesn't mean our side doesn't do this either. Let me be clear. There's two main components to all narratives and propaganda. Boogeymen and victims. Boogeymen and victims. So when you listen to a lady like Stacey Abrams last week, who gave her rebuttal to the State of the Union, and the State of the Union shows, when you look at Obama and Trump, never in American history have successive presidents been so starkly contrasting to each other. Those who love government love Obama. Those who love America love Trump. So with the Peach Tea Marxist, she ran the usual Goebbelsian Democrat propaganda. There's always three points, not in any order, but there's three. Marxism-Leninism, which is the bourgeois versus the proletariat economic class war. It's as tried and true a Democrat play as burning crosses on the front lawns of black people. The creation of new rights out of thin air. I heard the Peach Tea Marxist use the phrase reproductive justice. I went and looked at my pocket constitution, Curtis. I didn't see the words reproductive justice anywhere in there. And then last but not least, boogeyman politics. That America is a racist, homophobic, Islamophobic, misogynistic nation that oppresses minorities' rights to vote, and white police officers who are covertly KKK grand wizards prowl the streets at night looking for unarmed black men. Oh, but everything is great at the border, though, in case you're wondering.
Yeah, and I want to address that border issue, too,
in a little bit. I'm asking you guys, is there a single narrative right now out of the 2020 pitch? Is there one winning narrative? Just one.
Not that I can see, Rich, but I want to say this about the 2020
issue.
So when
are we going to get to the winning narratives then? 2020 started, Michael.
You know, I'm a person who likes to see things in writing. In most cases,
it's in writing, though. You can find it on all their sites. Get high, make love, not war, no humans illegal, free stuff, hug a terrorist. It's all there. Whether it's Cuckoo Kamala Harris, who's clairvoyant because she was dropping it like it's hot with Snoop Dogg before there was a Snoop Dogg, or Chief Fugazi Ahanis, Chief Crack-A-Beer, Elizabeth Warren, and let's not forget the gay sex goon Cory Booker, who asked judicial nominees and Mike Pompeo their opinions on gay sex, because those are very important questions, Curtis. Sorry, I had like 17 coffees today. I've got a 1 year, a Parkland 1 year article that I'm publishing tomorrow, Michael. And I got to be honest with you guys. When I was writing it, I'm not a super emotional person, but as I was writing that article, I got to tell you, I got almost a weird combination of nausea and just sorrow in writing the 1 year later, because 1 year after Parkland, not a damn thing has
been
changed
done.
Down here
Nothing.
In South Florida.
No,
not
I
a
see
damn
that.
Thing, except for our governor, Ron DeSantis, going to this son of a blank, Scott Israel, the Broward sheriff, and getting his ass out of that office. And it was a long time coming. I'm done. Thank you.
Fired him on the spot, which is something that you really have to love, because Israel was and his people were as much responsible for Parkland as and the inability of the school system to keep up with their at-risk students. It's just phenomenal. You know, I'd like to cap what Rich has said by making a comment. It's a quote from one of my favorite people in the world. His name is Charles Barkley. And Sir Charles used to play basketball, and he turned into a political pundit. He was thinking of running for governor in the state of Alabama, and decided maybe they weren't ready. But Charles Barkley said once on a television, I actually saw him say this, and when he said it, I fell to the floor on my knees laughing. And I don't know if anybody's ever heard this before, but he said, I've got to tell you something. Poor people in America have been voting for Democrats for 60 years. And guess what? They're still poor. They've made up no ground whatsoever. Nothing's ever happened to their credit. But they keep on voting. They keep on voting, and they keep on voting for the Democrats because the Democrats say the right things and do nothing. And I mean do virtually nothing. So, and I'm also on this new kick, as you've all heard partially last week, that, yeah, the Democrats are an issue. Yes, I believe in the Republican, the fundamentals of the Republican Party. But, you know, it's everybody in Washington, D.C. right now. It really is on the Hill, certainly not in the White House. This guy's trying to do the right thing, even though he doesn't say it the right way. He's trying to do the right thing. But, you know, come on, folks. How much longer? I don't know if you all know Candace Owen or if you've ever listened to her, but you ought to copy down the name and go to the Internet and listen to Candace Owen. She's a young black girl from New York, maybe the Bronx, who to me makes AOC look like the idiot that she really is. And by the way, I have the 116th Congress's first session HR resolution, unnumbered and unsigned, but I have it in my hot little hands here, all 14 pages of the Green New Deal. And you know, I got into an argument with a liberal that I was reading what Fox said about it and this, and not all that stuff is in there. Every American should be forced to get this bill and read it. It's very plain and easy to understand English. What it says is probably what both parties have been saying for the last 40 years, but have never been able to react on. So now we're going to make it a bill or circumvent a bill that's already out there, and put the greenhouse. Nobody's going to vote for this, Michael.
You know what, Larkin, you're right.
Nobody's going to vote for this, and I'm going to tell you why. She had a little kerfuffle late last week with the Speaker of the House, who said, this has kind of not come through the regular channels of Congress, because Pelosi's looking at this thing going, you got to be kidding me. This is the battle line that we're going to draw for 2020? We'll get our butts so badly beat, we won't know whether we're coming or going. I mean, this thing says that more than $500 trillion is lost annually to our economic output in the United States because of global warming. $500 trillion is lost. Is there some way you can prove that to me?
Well, that's why, Larkin, I said before, we want to see this in writing. Well, it's nice to say I could tell you that cows are going to crap automobiles tomorrow and we'll be waiting at the next pasture for those cars to flop out, but it's not going to happen. We're wasting our television time, our newspaper reporters' time on idiotic suggestions. If it was voted on in the House and Senate, which I would like to see it, put it on the table right away. And if it goes, let's go. And if it's no, forget it. Let's get it off the table and get back to the real issues of the day.
That's not the legislative process. Unfortunately, Michael, it just doesn't work that way. It clearly doesn't work that way. It's got to get – it's not even assigned a bill number yet. It's not even signed an original signature by the two members that are presenting it. It's got a long way to go.
Well, then maybe it's time to shut this thing out. Shut it out of existence until it gets a bill number and it's introduced. Then we know what it's all about. Otherwise, these people are taking up all this airtime, all this media time, all this brain power for what?
And this is why I would say to Curtis, This is clearly why this bill is going to get squashed, and squashed pretty quickly, because it is a line of demarcation that the Democrats cannot draw in the sand. They'll be so overwhelmingly pounded in the 2012 elections that they can't allow this to hit the streets and actually become, I mean, Curtis, I don't know if you've read it yet, I've never seen anything like this. If this is what Congress is doing, then we truly do need to find a new way of governing, because this is the first time I've ever gone and found the bill and copied all 14 pages and then thought, well, maybe I'm just too conservative. So I went out and got the GreenParty.USA's take on the bill, and I thought, no, because the Green Party calls it manna from heaven almost. But listen, whereas because the United States has historically been responsible for a disproportionate amount of greenhouse gases, having emitted 20% of global greenhouse gas emissions through 2014. Really? 20%, does that mean that the next largest polluter is at 19 or 18%? It just makes no sense, and it makes wild accusations. Curtis, if you have not seen this, you have to get it. This will put you to sleep tonight laughing. I mean, laughing.
This is the gift that keeps on giving. It's been called
the
longest the longest suicide note in history. It's the Democratic Party suicide note. This, I don't care. I mean, look, they're trying to bury it, walk away from it, shoot it in the head five times, bury it under an avalanche, and then plow it over with 50 million tons of dirt, but it is not going away. I can assure you that President Trump and his campaign team are going to be talking about this every day, every way, the end of November of 2020. Every single candidate that steps forward to run under the Democratic banner is going to have to answer a battery of questions about this. What part of this are you for? What part of this are you against? What do you think about paying people who are unwilling to work? What do you think about the U.S. government knocking down every building in America and rebuilding it? What do you think about eliminating cars, cows, airplanes, and building high-speed trains where there aren't any people so that you can get from Chicago to California without flying? Yes, let's build a high-speed rail across Wyoming where there aren't any people and where there won't be any cows. That's great.
Yeah,
they'll try to walk away from it, but what that shows you, what they will be doing by walking away from it, will be proving that Democrats lie. They will not tell you what they really stand for. I have to give Ocasio-Cortez credit for finally, honestly saying out loud, openly, what the Democratic Party has been trying to institute and implement secretly for the last 20 or 30 years. Finally, it's out in the open. We want government takeover of the economy, telling everybody who's going to get hired, how they're going to be working, what they're going to be paid, and what job they're going to be doing. Brilliant idea. Great idea. That's worked so well nowhere, ever.
we can go to Mark now when I tell you the final quote that I heard out of AOC when she was being interviewed. I had to go back and replay it three times because I didn't believe she said it. But she said, quote unquote, and this is a verbatim quote, "Facts don't matter as long as you're morally correct."
Say that again, yep. Larkin.
That's a quote from Ms. Cortez. Facts don't matter as long as you're morally correct.
Wow.
Such is the foundation on which every totalitarian regime in history has been built.
You are right, Curtis. Wow. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Facts don't matter as long as you're morally correct. every totalitarian state in the world has been built on propaganda like that.
Now, can you imagine all the American workers that work in the airlines and all the people who work building cars and all, what they must be thinking? You know, they must be thinking, well, let it go on. But I think personally that this is a waste of our tax dollars, even to give this idea a lot of time, a lot of hearings. We are paying for that time, those hearings, to get that bill number, to get it in circulation. We're paying that. If she has such wonderful ideas, let her go and get someone to sponsor it, not to enter the Congress and all of a sudden, you know, give out this drivel. Money does not grow on trees. And if it does, I want to know where that tree is. All of us can gather before it so that we can fill our bushel baskets up. And money does not come in the form of rain. We can't stand outside in the rain waiting for the money to come. Neither can government. Government only gets our tax dollars and circulates our tax dollars, which is supposed to protect the company, country, also make sure that the well-being of the people is always first. This is not helping the well-being of the people. It's idioticness. It's foolishness. It's utter insanity. People in other parts of the world, by the way, Larkin, people in other parts of the world could just reject the plan, and United States would be stuck with no planes and all this other rigmarole. We'd have to exile all the cows to Europe.
India.
Or India.
The cows to India where they're worshipped.
Because she said those cow farts are unacceptable. Mark, tell me everything.
I love it, guys. I'm picturing Rich on a treadmill on his 20th cup of coffee. But great stuff. A lot going on. And any leader, you know, Donald Trump, our president, has to stay laser focused on his agenda. And I believe just talking to the people, I've done two workforce development speeches in the last couple of weeks. I got a big one coming up at Olean Schools with 500 people, Mike, and with the American-made movie being played first for Dream It, Do It. But I'm listening to people around, and they were very happy with the State of the Union speech, made Trump stronger in my neck of the woods, and this latest speech, and they love what he's pulled off. In the dead of winter in Buffalo in February, which is the worst time, I think Congress should all meet outside here and make their decisions. But people are generally happy. I think Trump is getting stronger from the brutalization of the media over the 2 years, stronger and stronger in his base. Curtis, you may agree or may not, but lately, just in the last weeks or so, a lot of positive. But he's got to stay laser-focused and stay a leader. And really, the media just always tries to take confidence away from the people, and I don't like that because it screws up this charging economy. And in my industry is oil, mining, military. Again, we're just looking for workers. I had a big workforce development meeting last week for 50 teachers, Larkin, and you know, Mike, you would have loved it, and the staff of these local schools. And we were with Moog and this other LSI Astronics that makes all the dashboard panel lights. Everybody's booming with work but cannot find skilled trades. So, you know, again, we got to be one country, one goal. Our president's got to stay laser-focused on that leadership, that agenda. And what I love about him is he wasn't a politician. People forget that. He was not a politician. Billionaire, yes. Politician, no. And that's what the people wanted. Rich, you say it best. He's for America. Otherwise, they're for the government and bigger government and free things. And we like the doers. But I'm always going back to our Made in America store, our mission, guys. My mission statement with the Made in America store is just to create and save jobs in the United States of America by increasing American manufacturing for our children's future. It's it. It's what's got to be done. We stick to it. We believe in it. And the same thing for Trump and our country. One country, one goal. And we got to keep nailing these things off. You don't need a package. It's like the stimulus package, 1,400 pages. Nobody read anything, and they passed it back in the day. I put a stimulus mailbox up. I never got a dollar from it. I thought I might get something. But these bills, they got to stay focused on their agenda. But I think there's things in my neck of the woods, the blue-collar area. My new shirt, remember, Boots Not Suits Built America. That area is strong, and they're believing in Donald Trump.
Mark, I want to ask you, of all the people you've been seeing announcing for president, has anyone talked about your agenda, our agenda, about increasing jobs, getting educational programs up to where they should be in the schools.
It's great.
Have you heard anybody talk about that?
Last speech, you know, panel board meeting, 50 teachers and staffers, everybody admitted it's taken us 10 years or so, but skilled trade shortage is on the front page of a lot of papers now. It hits Buffalo front page twice this year already. So it's being talked about. They want to know, how do we get results? We don't want lip service. It's like the Made in America store to me is an action plan. You go out, you buy Made in America products. We can watch the silly news and all that. We're making results right away. Our listeners can do that, Mike, right away. But we are seeing movement. It's not fast enough. It's a big disconnect in our education system. They want to know not just the kids need tours and we need internships and we got to tie the schools with the businesses so they know what they need at younger ages. We all agree now, Mike, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, we've got to get that done. Not only the students, though, we've got to get parents, parents, and parents with the students to go on these tours to take the stigma away from working with your hands is a bad thing, because some of my welders are going to be making six figures now. This is high tech. Everything has a computer. It's on, Mike, and a career tech education is what we're kind of putting everything under now, career tech education. Business First in Buffalo is trying to get that enhanced in the book of schools and a list of schools. When they list them, they want to know if they have CTE training. Can that be part of the diploma? So a lot of change, Mike. It's going in the right direction. A lot of positive, but these companies cannot believe they're turning away work because they cannot find the workers.
Find the workers. In fact, you know what, Mark, as we discussed once before, I would like really to see a list of the jobs available and what the first starting salary is and what the salary could go to. I'd like that to be shown, because many people think that the people working with their hands, they're the small potato guys, but they're not. In today's world, people working with their hands, be they builders, repair people, HVAC, they are the people making the money.
Mike, what's neat with these workforce development, they're planning, you know, we sit on a board and the people get to ask us if it's students, people looking for jobs. Or last was the teachers and staffers of all the local schools, which was neat. But a lot of these younger, you know, people that are with me, say between, you know, 25 and 30, said their parents told them, hey, go to college, you'll figure out what you want to be. And they all laugh. We didn't figure out in college what we want to be. We got a big loan, came out of college, and then thought maybe we kind of know what we want to be. So most of them and almost all of them agree they don't want that debt, and they're being pushed hard, college for everyone, one size fits all. But we all know, you know, Curtis, me and you talk about kids need a purpose, and we've got to make sure they know that purpose could be skilled trades.
And, you know, your good point, Mark, because I'd like to see what those work programs would cost as opposed to a college education that leads to a beautiful sheepskin. But where does it take
you?
You
can't get rid of, Mike. That's what we talk a lot about.
Right.
It's a fact.
And that I could see the money going into, especially if a person is already inclined to do things with their hands. Let's get this thing moving, finally and forever. I mean,
how do you compete in 2020 with what Trump's accomplished? How do you really compete with this growing economy, this demand, Moog and Astronics? It's more work than they've ever had in 10 years. You can't find workers. How do you compete with that? You got to keep it going. It should be a torch that's passed on, not changed.
Right. The next president is going to have a lot of work in front of them. I believe the next person.
But we should continue on what we've already
accomplished.
Right.
The next president is going to have to mirror the good things that we have taken care of. They're going to have to look at what killed industries in America, what drove the 77,000 industries out of America over the period of about 26 to 28 years. That has to all be addressed, not worrying about all this idiotic stuff.
All the crap.
Who,
like,
is going to pay for this?
And troubles, just
show
like
me problem. Where that money tree is so I can go there. I have a few people who would like to follow me over with bushel baskets and grab up the money as fast as possible.
So I've got a little fact here for a Mark that I think he'll get a kick off, because I know what he pays welders. This House bill that's introduced here says that it's going to pay every family member with four people a livable wage that is not poverty, not a level of poverty. And they have names for these, for the areas and the different people. It's hourly wages are going to go up, and the This is the third worst level of socioeconomic mobility in the developed world since before the Great Recession, which was the Great Recession. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that was 10 years ago. But at any rate, Mark,
2008.
This wage that we're talking about, this livable wage that's going to get everybody out of poverty, $28,400 a year. $28,400. Are you kidding me? In one year, that's going to be poverty level.
Well, first of all, you're right, Larkin, and I'm going to turn again to Curtis. How is it that for 30 years since Ronald Reagan, no president, no House and Senate addressed the poverty issue in America? How did they look away from what is happening right in their own individual communities where they are elected to represent those people? How is it possible? Don't they ride down the streets of the neighborhoods? What's going on in their minds? Why did that happen, Curtis?
They spend inordinate amount of time in Washington, D.C., in being shuttled in chauffeur-driven cars from the Capitol building to their nice apartments in the Northwest, so they don't see the poverty. They see people walking around in suits and ties, where everyone's a lawyer, everyone's a lobbyist, everyone's a professional. And so they don't see it. And then they're told by the lobbyists and they're told by all the experts and the smart people like the ones who can write the Green New Deal, all these very smart people, that we don't need manufacturing anymore. We're all going to be high-tech engineers and designers and symbol workers, work with our minds and not with our hands. The Secretary of Labor under Bill Clinton, Robert Reich, he actually wrote that. He actually wrote that we're all going to be, it's the mind worker, he called them like symbolic workers or symbolist workers. I mean, some bizarre term that he cooked up out of some academic postgraduate seminar. And this is the future. They promised us we don't need these jobs anymore. There are new, better jobs that are coming along. So don't worry if you're fired from your manufacturing job, if you're fired, if they move that factory to China. That doesn't matter because
right. There
are new, better jobs coming along.
And you know, Curtis, anyone can go to the internet and listen to some of his past reports saying just what you said. We don't need those industries. Everything is going to be flour and roses without manufacturing. That is
Nancy Pelosi said we have an innovation. I remember her saying this, and it was like 2005 or 2015 or not 15. It was before that. 2012, I don't know, some not that far distant past, that we have an innovation economy. America will be the innovators. We're going
right.
to just always make up new things. And that's the spirit behind this Green New Deal. Oh, we're all going to live on, we're going to power our cars and our industries on sunshine and roses. the odor of the roses will be wafted on the wind that will power our power plants and our homes and our cars. And why? How? Oh, because we say so.
You know,
none
Curtis,
of these people are engineers. I mean, look, Alexandria, if you really believe this and you really want this world to be powered by solar and wind and get rid of fossil fuels, you're in the wrong profession. You should be an engineer, not a politician.
First of all, I want to see all these people suggesting these changes lead by example. Yeah. No more airplanes. No more milk. Everything they're complaining about, they're not allowed to have until this bid is passed. Do you believe that'll happen, Rich?
Well, Michael, I have to give credit to Curtis for something he said earlier about how, you know, the issue is never the issue. And what's in front of us, things are never as they really seem. It's like in Hamlet. Remember back in your English classes, guys, you had Hamlet, and then you had the mousetrap, which was the play within the play. Mm-hmm. That the new Dems right now are not really the new Democrats are not really that different from the older from the old school ones. The only difference is in their approach, and that's why I hearken back to amongst many sage and wise statements that President Reagan made. Perhaps the most sagacious he made was that everything we're seeing now would eventually, like Reagan predicted everything that's happening now. He said it would creep. It would be in small doses, under the radar, onesies and twosies. Oh, Curtis, it's not that big of a deal. Is it really that big a deal at the border? It's not that big of a deal, is it? You must be exaggerating. And then all of a sudden, one day, Michael, the doses have all added up. And now here we are. And now here we are where, for 2020, whomever the Democrats nominate is going to be the, and I guess I'm not the biggest fan of the word radical because that is a sort of subjective word, but will be the most radical nominee the Democrats have ever nominated. See, I always tell people about it all the time about Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is just, Hillary Clinton will do what, like she would have done whatever was necessary to just sell off the White House. She doesn't have really any, I don't really see her having any ideological bent, Curtis, right? I mean, it's, you say what you say to get votes, but that's what made Hillary Clinton such a dangerous candidate was that she truly actually didn't stand for anything. So now when you look at the trajectory, Michael, I mean, what she stood for was for herself, right? Now, obviously, all politicians to some extent stand for themselves, and it's why I say to this day that had Clinton won, had we lost today on this show, we'd be saying, you guys remember the good old days when Obama was president? That's what we'd be saying right now.
Very well
said. And had we lost, I don't believe we would have ever won again. I don't believe we would have ever had any, even a scintilla of a balance on our Supreme and federal courts, and the Dems would have owned the presidency basically indefinitely. That's how big of a win this was. Curtis, but the problem is that, you know, like the American voters who came out, I don't want to sound overconfident here because politics is sales and hubris is the cardinal sin of a salesperson. But, you know, what President Trump has to keep doing is just doing what he's done, right? And just keep working to keep the promises that were made on the campaign trail. Human beings don't respond well, Michael, to abrupt, sudden change. It's not in our DNA, actually.
Hey, Rick.
2016 was that kind of an election, right? It was a sudden, abrupt, drastic change to a decades-old established class of politics in Washington. So it's not a surprise to see everything that's happened now. It just isn't.
Yes, Mark, you were going to say
something. No, Rich, I wanted to ask you a question. If Obama would have done a great job, and if I would have been busy for them 8 years and not the recession we went through in the tough times, would Hillary have been elected?
Well, here's how I'll answer that question, Mark. Okay, so the first answer to the question is that if the actual gains we're experiencing right now had truly been mostly President Obama's doing, my question for Hillary Clinton's campaign staff is, how come you never talked about that?
Right.
How come that was never sold on the campaign trail? And I don't, and again, because I try to be objective here, Mark, it isn't, I won't say that Obama did, that there was nothing done positively for the economy. And I've always also said that of the debt accumulated under Obama, it wasn't exactly all of his doing because the Republican Party likes to spend money.
Absolutely.
As well.
That's right. And under Obama, I have to give him this. He did.
You got to look at it that way.
He did inherit a very bad recession. And because years before Obama, we had ignored the poverty and the employment issues in America, he had to put out a lot of those dollars just to keep the people who were in poverty in some, with some kind of income, with some kind of benefits. This would have been a very ugly situation. We've turned that page.
But it had to be done.
That's right. Curtis, we turned the page. We're now focused on getting more jobs, getting more industries, bringing back the companies that left America, putting on the tariffs. The heck with them. They put tariffs on our stuff every day of the year. Our stuff going to their countries has a tariff. It's about time we return the tariffs to the American products.
And Michael, and just to add to that, I mean, everyone has to understand, gazillionaires earned and made record gains under President Obama. And the reason primarily for that is that the gazillionaire class of the United States predominantly votes Democrat. Big government always benefits gazillionaires because they have a front row seat to getting a piece of that pie. The middle class doesn't have a, the middle class doesn't, there's no way for them to finagle getting a piece of the big government pie. Right, the poor and impoverished amongst us, they're kept on the drug of dependency. So the gazillionaire class always does well in big government. But again, I always like to add this point because I'm an equal opportunity offender. A lot of the debt that was accumulated in that big government, Michael, it wasn't solely President Obama. Most of it was. I mean, Donald Trump has cut approximately $30 billion. In regulations, government regulations in the first 2 years, Curtis. Under President Obama, in his first 2 years, there was approximately a quarter of a trillion dollars in government regulation. How much of that quarter trillion benefited the middle class working families, Michael?
That's right.
How much of it did? How much of it benefited?
It didn't benefit them because the jobs continue to go overseas. No one looks at what continued that march out of America. People tell me, I went out of America to get away from the regulations, to get away from the taxes, because they sold me a very good plan that I would have to do no work, just import the items and sell them as usual. That was a great way of doing it.
Well, that's something that President Trump pointed out in his rally in El Paso the other day. This Green New Deal, they put all these regulations and stipulations on businesses. The factories will just move to China. Look, the Green New Deal, all of this nonsense, just like all of the other regulations that have been piled on American businesses, only apply to American businesses.
Right.
And you leave the door open where they can manufacture overseas and import the stuff duty-free. Guess what? That's what they'll do. And that's what's happened. These people live in their bubbles. The liberals live in their liberal enclave bubbles. They see sunshine and light. They have a lot of money already, and they think the whole world is that way, or they think the whole of the United States is that way. They don't realize that, no, we've impoverished great stretches of this country.
Absolutely.
And that's the other thing, to answer your question, were they blind to this? How did they let this happen? They bought the philosophy of globalism. They bought the blue sky, rainbow, unicorn philosophy that we can just forget about nations, forget about borders, let these multinational corporations operate free will as they wish anywhere in the world, and everything will be great, and everything's going to work out, and it'll all be better in the end. Forget about the country. Forget about what's good for America. Forget about America entirely. We're now too sophisticated for that. We've gone beyond that. We are now citizens of the world, and everybody shares our values. Everybody shares our beliefs. Everybody wants what's good for everybody, and we can just go down that primrose path. I have a piece that's going to be coming out shortly that goes to the testimony that was given before Congress to this, that lays out the whole plan. And this was done over 50 years ago. It was the Summer of Love, 1967, July 1967, the Summer of Love. But all the weird ideas were not confined to the Haight-Ashbury. This was testimony given before the Joint Economic Committee of Congress by George Ball, who was an Undersecretary of State for Presidents Johnson and Kennedy. He was a Wall Street guy. And he testified along with David Rockefeller, a man who needs no introduction, the late, great David Rockefeller. And they stand there before this Joint Economic Committee of Congress and lay out the whole case. And he says explicitly, George Ball says explicitly, the goal of our foreign trade policy must be to erode national, sovereign national states. Right now, the multinational corporations are being hindered by a crazy quilt of individual nations, and these must be eroded. We have to eliminate them, and we have to transform the governance from a national governance and transfer that power to transnational authorities, supranational institutions that will provide oversight, such as monetary policy will be governed by these transnational institutions, not by the Fed, not by the U.S. government, nobody. And individual nations are an impediment to the great future that he envisions. And he lays it out there, and I quote it, and I link to the actual congressional record. You can see the congressional record and read it there for yourself. It's globalism 101 explained in as concise and coherent term as you will see it anywhere.
Curtis, you just said tariffs
are not even the issue anymore. 50 years ago, my friends, he said tariffs are already so low as to be inconsequential. The goal of our trade policy and our free trade agreements must be to transfer power and authority to supranational institutions and erode the power of national governments.
Curtis, you just said transformation, and I'm not sure if you guys, I start to get short of breath. Whenever I hear transformation, my heart rate surges. I get a little short of breath. If Paul Revere were alive today, he'd yell, "The transnationals are coming! The transnationals are coming!" It never works. What you just said has never ever worked for a sovereign nation in the history. It's the Cro-Magnon man.
No. Nope. Never.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear by the music, it's time for us to say farewell for today's broadcast. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I want to thank Curtis. I want to thank Mark, Rich, and also Larkin and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, for being with us today. It was a great broadcast. Thank you all. Next week, we're going to talk about the wall.
Excellent. Check out my new website, guys, madeinamericastore.com. We just launched it, Mike.